Here's what we're going to talk about today. My background, how you assess your natural disaster risk for your area, how you're going to respond, recover, and prepare. And we're not, because we have 45 minutes plus time to talk, we're not going to go into super detail, but what we're going to do is hit the overview of these topics. Now, real quickly, who is this guy? Well, I was in law enforcement for 27 years. Past 5 years, I've worked as an emergency manager. That's me. That's my wife, Barbara. And so I had to put her picture in there because she goes with me wherever I go. She's not here, but I've been married 35 years, so you know, I can kind of. And I've served in the Air National Guard for a long time. And I'm a member of Grace Community Church in Sun Valley, California. John MacArthur's our pastor, and so that's just a little background me. That's a picture of a Burbank police car. That's where I worked for a long time. So, okay, assessing your risk. This is very, very simple. You know in your area what your risks are. If you're living in Phoenix, Arizona, you don't need to train for the tsunami threat. If you're living in, for example, Indiana or Iowa or something like that, you need to worry about tornadoes. Probably you're not going to have an earthquake, but you need to concentrate on whatever natural disaster is going to affect you. So you concentrate on that, and that's what your planning's for. Some people, we're going to talk a little bit later about developing a plan, and one thing I'll reiterate, my suggestion is, you know, Chief Vernon spoke, and I did a lot of things with LAPD, their agency next door, and the LAPD has two emergency operations binders that are like 8 inches thick, and they've got a plan for any conceivable thing that could ever possibly happen. My recommendation is you don't need something like that. Need something simple, because if you have a 1,600-page emergency operations plan, nobody's going to read it. Military, I've been there a long time. We're famous for long, detailed plans, which are great, except if it's for your church or your ministry, something simple. We'll be talking about that. Now, assessing your risk, southeastern United States. If you're down in Florida, you better be prepared for hurricanes and water emergencies. Midwest, tornadoes. West Coast, earthquakes. You've got to be prepared for the type of natural disaster that's common to your area. Now, assessing your risk. One of the things, I put this up here, and this is a kind of a hope. It's not true in every area, but wherever you're at, oftentimes there's going to be emergency managers saying, you know, we're heading right into tornado season. Everybody needs to think about this, and this is coming up. Or some places, it's really unfamiliar to me, but I kind of got a little dose of it. Like up in Minnesota, hey, we're heading into the winter. We all know what a snow emergency is. We need to be thinking about how we're going to handle this. You're going to get warnings from your emergency management people, your county, your state, whatever. You need to start listening to those warnings and sharing them with your congregation, your ministry. Hey, you know, they're talking right now in California, Los Angeles, constant messages, this major earthquake's coming. 90% of the people are like, sun's shining, it's a nice day. You know, it's like Noah and building the ark. Why are you building this ark? People are ignoring it, but this is something. Share that information. And also, as you develop your plans and preparations for natural disasters, kind of follow what they're suggesting. The big thing with, for example, with earthquakes, earthquakes tend to be a regional disaster. The next big earthquake is probably, they're talking, it's going to affect from Bakersfield, California to northern San Diego County and somewhere in the middle. That's about 170 miles. So what do they emphasize there? You've got to be individually prepared because no help is coming. It's going to be a long time before you get individual help. Whereas, let's say we have a tornado. Tornado hits, goes for 200 miles on a half-mile swath. It's all around. The areas outside of that tornado could be very close to the path of destruction or undamaged. So the chances are there may be help that we can get you from close by that weren't involved. So you need to, whatever plans and preparations you have, you listen to your local authorities. And if you're on a church board and say, listen, they're talking about hurricane season and all the models show we're going to have a lot of hurricanes or whatever it is, we're in Florida or South Carolina on the coast, you need to start developing your plans based on what you're hearing. Don't ignore it. Now, there's two kinds of disasters we're going to talk about today, planned and unplanned. We have, over here, we have a hurricane in Florida. We know this is coming. This is not a surprise. Here, we have the community of La Conchita, California, just south of Carpinteria, which is between Ventura and Santa Barbara. On one sunny morning, it's a beautiful day. If you are sitting in this house and you could look this way, you're looking about 300 yards to the Pacific Ocean. It's beautiful, gorgeous. This entire hillside came down and crushed like 15 homes. Killed all those people. They were having breakfast, vacuuming the floor without warning. It's hard to see how much this crushed, but this hillside dropped. Several thousand feet of hillside just settled, and those people were lost. So it was completely unplanned. There was no warning. There was no like rumblings the day before or anything. It was just, people had died. I was standing in my kitchen, and suddenly we were buried by hundreds of tons of dirt, and we died. So that's the difference between planned and unplanned, and we'll be talking about both. Now, planned. Hurricanes. Some tornadoes are planned. When I say planned, I also mean expected. You know, if we got tornado warnings. I'm originally from Kansas. I lived there for a little bit, and then my dad got transferred to San Diego and grew up on the West Coast. But go back to visit relatives in Kansas, and sure enough, you're watching Monday Night Football. Thing comes up, beep, beep. You know, we have thunder and heavy sales in Harvey County. They're moving from blah, blah, blah. And so you know, even though the tornado hasn't formed or appeared, you're getting some warnings. Same with flooding. Okay, we're going to have heavy rains over the next few days. It's possible that you may get that. Same with an ice storm. These are sometimes a planned or expected events, natural disasters. Now, unplanned. We talked about that landslide, flash floods. We just had a situation in Arkansas this last year. All those people in that national forest at several campgrounds along the little Arkansas River. I forgot the name of the river. And they had been having heavy rains. They had flash floods. Came in the middle of the night, and that's what was left. You know, this huge debris, mud, water flow just came in. You know, 20 people died. That was completely unplanned. And then, of course, earthquakes. There is no way to predict when exactly an earthquake will occur. However, in California, they spent so much time. There's strong indications you're going to have one. It could be today, it could be 2 weeks, it could be 10 years, but we're going to have one. We know that these things are going to occur. So these are unplanned types of natural disasters. Now, how do you evaluate a disaster? How do you evaluate where you're at? Well, the first thing is extent and persistence. Is this a local or a regional disaster? Was it a tornado that came down, was on the ground for a short period of time, went across the corner of this one town, destroyed the corner of the town, and the earthquake or the tornado broke up, it dissipated. But it hit maybe a quarter mile area for 20 miles. Or is this a regional disaster, like I said, that covers hundreds of miles, Hurricane Katrina? The entire coastline and 100 miles inward from Louisiana, Mississippi, all those states down there, Alabama, that's a regional disaster. And the second one is this short or long-term condition? What do I mean by short-term? Some people say, well, Roger, you know, if we have a bad natural disaster and somebody in our church gets killed, well, that lasts forever, you know. Well, those memories do. But what I mean by this is, have we had a windstorm and a tree has come down and crushed a house and now it's over? Or do we have flooding in New Orleans and it's 3 or 4 months before we get this thing resolved? So is this short or long-term condition? Now, responding to a natural disaster. I'll be using some of these pictures. This is the first one. This is my hometown. in Heston, Kansas. We're going to see some pictures of Heston, Kansas. They had an earthquake in the early 90s. Not an earthquake, a tornado in the early 90s. It destroyed the town, and we'll be talking a little bit about it. I just happen to have lots of pictures of that. So, planned disaster, depending on the lead time, you warn the people and you take shelter. Maybe your lead time's fairly short. We have tornado warnings. We know this is coming. Or we've had a bad fire in, this happened in Los Angeles County. This last year we had a series of bad brush fires, and they go, listen, we're expecting heavy rains. The rains are going to last 24 hours. We know that if this rain goes over 10 hours at this level, we're going to have mudslides. This is a planned disaster. We can tell people, take shelter, go to high ground, do this. So we can take some steps. This means that also you may have some sufficient time to do some structure protection for your church or ministry. Maybe you're boarding up those windows like these people are. One of the things, it was very interesting as I was working on this, as far as structures being damaged, one of the biggest causes of structure damage in natural disasters are trees falling down. Believe it or not, in Southern California where I'm at, trees falling down are a problem. Why is that? Because we'll go through drought periods and the trees dry out and they became very brittle because there's no water. And then you get the Santa Ana winds, heavy winds, 60 to 70 miles an hour, and suddenly trees are coming down in your neighborhood. You wouldn't think California, LA would have a problem with that. But that's an issue. Well, what can you do as far as some structure protection before a natural disaster if it's planned? Hey, we know these bad storms are going to hit tomorrow. Can we get some guys together? Let's go and trim these trees back from the Sunday school building or whatever. You know, it's not pretty, but let's just get this stuff cut back real quick and hauled off so it doesn't become flying missiles and, you know, come down and crush somebody. Also, too, one of the most, at a church I was at, on the board, for a while I didn't go to Grace because I moved and then I was not going there, but one of the most contentious church meetings we had was, we had a tree surgeon come in and says, this giant, it was like a sycamore tree or something out in the middle here, is dead. Even though it's green, we're telling you it's dead and it's going to fall down and we're afraid it'll hurt somebody. And we had, you know, no, the people that planted this church planted that tree and God will protect us. And, you know, we can't cut this tree down. It's a symbol of God's mission here at this body. And the people, I was on the board at the time, people were going, listen, Roger, you take a screwdriver out there and push it in the tree, it goes right in. It's dead. Even though there's leaves on it, it's beautiful. The tree's dead. Those limbs, they're just big around. They're coming down. So, it can be an emotional issue, but if possible, you need to gently and lovingly tell people we need to take some steps. If it's cover up the windows, if it's move stuff out of the way of wind, if it's cut back trees, whatever, if it's a planned disaster, you may be able to take some steps. Now, unplanned, let's say something terrible happens and it's a complete surprise. Now, I mentioned that tornadoes can fall into both categories because there's a lot of stories where there was no warning, the cell appeared, and 10 minutes later we had a tornado, and before they could get the warning out, it struck this farming community and destroyed it. Okay. Something really bad has just happened. You're at your church or ministry. What do you do first? Well, the first thing is you orientate yourself, and that's because it's going to be overwhelming when you see something bad for the first time. Now, I don't know what your background. Are you in the military? Or?
I am in the military, yes.
Yeah.
My husband also.
Oh, boy. And I forgot where you're from.
I'm from Barrel. I'm an operations manager.
And you just had an earthquake, of all things.
Yeah, we did. The
guys that are here, some work for the federal government, they go, we thought it was a big WMD. Mm-hmm. We figured it was the bomb. They live out in Maryland, they go, oh no, they just bombed Washington, D.C. That's what the one guy was telling me last night.
Yeah, there was a whole lot of thoughts going through. Somebody thought it was a plane coming down, like a jet coming down.
Yeah.
I mean, the way it was, you could tell it wasn't thought there was that kind of like maybe what Denver was about there. But it shifts in Aspen, which is kind of unusual for that area.
Yeah. See, if you're from California, you would think like that. Here's what you'd think. You go, you feel that everything kind of shakes. You go, was that a 3.8 where I'm at? Or did Bakersfield just get destroyed 100 miles away? And so you go to the news, because either San Diego just fell off the map, or we just had a minor earthquake. Because sometimes they had that earthquake in just across the border in Mexico around Easter time. And 7.8. That was a huge earthquake. And in LA, we felt it like real strong. And that's the first thing everybody thinks. Well, we're okay. Is this just a small one here? Or is it the big one someplace and they just were destroyed? So it's funny when you live places, that's what you think. Now, orientate yourself. By this, I mean, well, you've got to take a minute to take a deep breath. And in the military, and there are times when things happen, and your first thing that goes through your mind is you're just overwhelmed. I can't believe this happened. I just look at this. This is unbelievable. And some people talk about freezing up, and some people talk about being in shock. But at first, you've got to orientate yourself. Okay, this has happened now. All right, stop. Let's get control here. What are we doing? Where am I at? I'm okay. Where are the kids? You know, where's the pastor? What happened? You know, do we need to evacuate? You orientate yourself. The second thing is an assessment. How many people are injured? Now, in my I talked last night about events involving mass casualties, where a lot of people get hurt all of a sudden at once, unexpectedly. And the big thing is assessing how many are injured. A lot of this comes from, believe it or not, the Israelis, because the Israelis are the world's experts on bombs and terrorist attacks and mass casualty events. They've had more than anybody. And I was looking at what they do as far as their training. Real simple. Orientate yourself. Where am I at? Is everybody okay? How many people are injured? And should we shelter in place or do we have to leave? Can we stay here or do we have to go? If it's a situation where the tornado has passed, caught us unprepared, the tornado's gone by, half the church fell down, but half the church is standing up. Well, we can probably shelter in place. We can probably stay inside and maybe move some people. Or is it that big earthquake where we have huge cracks in the walls and we just had the first aftershock and it seems like the entire building's about to pancake down? Then we have to evacuate. So you determine, can we stay here or do we have to go? Now, selecting a person to take charge, really, really important. As far as people in charge, we're looking for church leaders. And maybe I put a godly man, it could be a godly woman too. Could easily be a godly woman, because there may not be. It might be a ladies' retreat. There's nobody there. I put that, I should change that. But somebody with the qualifications of a deacon or an elder and an effective leader. And the example I gave last night was you could bring somebody in like George Patton. And we got four notes right here. He was an effective leader. He was a very much in your face kind of guy, but I don't know that he had qualifications for deacon or elder. However, you don't want just somebody that's loud and abrasive and knows how to give orders and shouts at people. You want somebody that's effective and a godly leader. So it could be a man or a woman. Somebody, if possible, with experience. And what I put is maybe law enforcement, ENS, fire service, military, medical, somebody has some experience. One of the things that's very difficult in churches is we say, well, you know, we have an elder board, and they're good at everything, so they'll be in charge. Or the pastor, he's a wonderful pastor teacher. He's in charge. He'll know what to do. But what I tell people is, at wherever you're at, the best trauma surgeon at UCLA Hospital is not preaching in the pastorate at Grace Community Church on Sunday morning. And Pastor John MacArthur, as great as he is not doing open heart surgery at UCLA Medical Center. Those are specialized tasks. Those are things that I'm not qualified to preach, but the pastor's not qualified. He has never had to deal with major traumatic situation in involving casualties and a disaster or a major accident or a shooting, it's not as experienced. Now, can we draw upon those people at church? Yes, we're going to need them. We're going to need them for counseling. And I'll talk about putting a team together. And one of the things is getting people to pray. You're going to need people like that. We'll talk about that. But try to find somebody that has some experience. And I also tell people, decide beforehand. You don't want to do it 5 minutes into this deal. Say, you know, we really need somebody in charge. And I forgot your name.
Chevelle.
Okay. How about Chevelle? Well, yeah. Well, where's she at? I don't know. Well, she didn't know we needed her, so she left. No, we needed to where beforehand we had people selected saying, if this happens, we're going to have one of these people take control of what's going on. Assemble a disaster team. Anybody with medical training, they're going to be important. Building contractors. If the buildings are damaged, I'm not a structural engineer. I can't walk in and say, this building's safe or no, it should be red tagged. These people, contractors, construction people, they go, listen, Roger, you can't go in there. This thing's coming down. Well, it looks good to me. And I'm telling you, you know, we got load-bearing walls that are gone, and you can't go in there. People that care for the children, special needs, or the elderly, very important. Able-bodied adults and young people, what do we use them for? You're going to need people to help carry people, help people. Now, your young people, like your teenagers and stuff, if you've got to rapidly start cleaning up, they're good for that because they're not like an old guy like me and wear out. Those kids can go all day, and you give them a task and have somebody organizing them, you can use them. And then I put people to begin praying. There's going to be people that are not going to be able to do anything for you. A good example is a guy that I have a close friend at church. He's quadriplegic. He prays for me when I go places. He prays for me when I do different things. He wants to be involved, but he physically cannot do. He's confined to a wheelchair, has a little joystick. That's how he gets around. But he says, Roger, I'm praying for you. Those kind of people, you immediately get them going. Okay, we need to start praying because Sunday school building's badly damaged. We think there's children in there. We're going to try to get in there to get them. We need this group just to start praying. So that's as important as having the trauma surgeon I mentioned or the world's greatest emergency manager. We need the people to start praying. Boy, I feel bad about that. I did that twice. Okay, attempt to communicate. Depending on the type of disaster, you should attempt to communicate to the outside world. Now, once you have a communications link, you've got to maintain it. And this is what I mean by that. I tell everybody, for a natural disaster or a church shooting or whatever, the cell phones are out. Forget the cell phones. They're not going to work because you're probably aware what happens is we overload this cell tower that's right next to campus. Everybody tends to have a certain type of cell phone service based on the service they have in that area. If you're in Los Angeles and you live where I am, you have Sprint. But like if you go to another state, you go, no, this Sprint coverage is terrible. You need Verizon here, or you need AT&T, because they have different levels of coverage where you go. If everybody gets on that cell phone, the cell phone tower will overload, phone calls won't work. Jeff Lasseter last night from Wedgwood Baptist talked about that shooting. 7 people killed, 7 people wounded. Took the police 12 minutes to get there. I'm an ex-cop. We've got a bunch of ex-cops. 12 minutes? Fort Worth, Texas? Come on. Everybody went to the cell phone. It overloaded. So for 9 minutes, people were trying to call on the cell phone. Took the police 3 minutes to get there, but they didn't know. Hundreds of people grabbed that phone, started calling, cell phones went out. So you've got to find a hard line. And once you put somebody on that phone, you leave them there. They can't leave. You've got to have somebody on the phone. Sometimes the EMS authorities or 911 authorities will tell you, stay on the line. Okay, the paramedics are there, but they're not sure which building you're in. Where are you at? They need this type of information. You've got to keep somebody on that line. The worst thing is, and one of my assignments, my last assignment on the police department, I was a lieutenant in charge of the 911 center for the city of Burbank and emergency management. And Burbank's, you know, 20 square miles, 115,000 people. Never fails. Something bad would happen. Person calls 911, what's your emergency? Police or fire? Just send help right now. Crane. You know, well, what does that mean? What does send help right now? You can't, that doesn't help us at all. And we can't help you. So you put somebody on there. Listen, this is what's going on. Okay, have you, how many people are injured? Well, we just heard that there's a dozen kids in this one classroom and the ceilings come down. Okay, which part of the church is it at? They're giving information and they have somebody they can talk to, as opposed to we've got 900 calls that came in. We don't know which one we should talk to. They're all reporting and, you know, the tornado hit the church. And so it's really important that you have that communications link. You need to share what's happening at your location. And if this is a situation, let's say you have a natural disaster and it's gone through your area, for example, an earthquake or a tornado or some type of a storm. One of the things too for churches is you need to contact your at-risk members. And you need to think about that. There are people in your church that are not there every Sunday. Why is that? Remember I talked about the guy that prays for me when he goes, well, he has to get loaded in this special van. And sometimes the van's not available. Sometimes he can't go. There's a problem. He's not there. So the big earthquake hits. Who's checking on Joe? Who's checking on Mrs. Elder? Who's checking on Mr. Parsons, who's 98 and lives by himself? Oh, we forgot. When the Northridge earthquake hit, I will tell you one of the things I was most ashamed of, this big earthquake hits in 94. Major disaster. Buildings coming down. Lots of people injured. We're like right there at the epicenter. I tell my wife, okay, all the girls are okay. I had three daughters. We're all okay. The house is a disaster. We have no water or electricity. But you're safe. Even if we have aftershocks, I looked the house over. It's a one-story house. It's not going to collapse on you. We may never live here again, but you're okay. I said, I've got to go to work. I don't know when I'll be back. I'm leaving as soon as the sun comes up, because it was 4:30 in the morning. I was waiting for the sun to come up because the streets were all destroyed. So I leave. I get home about, you know, I'm totally focused. Okay, I've got to get to the department, check in, get my gear, and get out in the field. Okay, because I know they're trying to call everybody in. The problem was, with that earthquake, there's a series of freeways going out of Los Angeles. The 14 freeway goes out, and a ton of the cops and firefighters live out there. Men and women live out there and a couple other valley areas, which are very nice. The problem is they couldn't get back into work. So all they had were the people on duty and a handful that could get there. And I happened to be one of the handful. Get home 14 hours later. There's like a 90-year-old lady that we took to church on a consistent basis. Took her out, got her a meal, make sure she was good to go every Sunday. And Barbara goes, did you think about Mrs. Parsons? I go, oh my gosh. Is she okay? She's trapped under her table. She crawled under the table and part of the kitchen cabinet's collapsed on it. She was trapped under there for 6 hours before somebody thought of her. And I'm telling you, godly little lady, and you know, she had a great attitude. I felt so bad about that. And that was a lesson learned, that in your church, you need to have a list of those people, that the single mom that's got like a special needs child, elderly folks, the widower, Mr. Jones, you know, he's on a walker. His wife passed away 2 years ago. His son lives in Phoenix. He lives in L.A. He's kind of on his own. You've got to have a list of those people, and as soon as the dust clears, it's the prayer chain. I don't care. Somebody in the church, we need to have a list to start contacting them. Why is that? Because our EMS, police and fire, be able to go door to door looking for those folks. They don't even know they exist. And that was one of the things I felt badly about, you know, that I should have gone over there. I should have brought a pry bar. We needed a pry bar from my garage. I could have walked to her house. It was about three blocks. I could have run over there, pried that door open when she was upstairs, got up there, pried her front door open, and got her out. She wasn't hurt. She was trapped, though. And she's like, this little lady. I mean, she can't call for help. Somebody finally figured out to go check on her. I'd forgotten her. Don't do that. Okay, now, caring for the injured. Simple triage. We have the walking wounded. Those are people like this guy up here. Okay, are you okay? Okay, what I want you to do is I want you to put your hand on your forehead. You got this bad cut. Stop the bleeding. I want you to leave the building, and I want you to walk to the parking lot. Somebody will be there to meet you. That's the walking wounded. The second level of triage. This person's badly injured, but we think they're going to live, and we can help them. We can stop the bleeding. We can help them breathe a little easier. We can put somebody with them to help them. And finally, we've got people whose injuries are either fatal, they're dead, or they're going to die. And we would, even if we had the Mayo Clinic with the finest surgeons in the country and we put them on the operating table right now, they probably couldn't save them. We cannot spend a lot of time trying to save them. Now, do we have somebody with them to pray for them and be with them and to comfort them? You know, yeah, if we can do that, that's very important. But we can't. Here's one of the things that's very difficult in a major national disaster. You've had a building collapse. Tornadoes, that's very common. You've got people in your church, you've got no tools, you've got your bare hands, and the building's come down or partially collapsed. You're going to want to go try to rescue those people. You may not be able to right now. You may have to wait till the fire department gets there or somebody gets there with a backhoe or something, because you physically cannot get in there. What you've got to do is you've got to concentrate on those that we can help, and we need to be praying and see what we can do about this situation, but it may be that we can't help them. It's very hard. For people that have no experience with this, it is very hard to tell somebody to say, I'm sorry, they're dead. Jeff Lassiter last night, the guy from Wedgwood, he goes, when the guy came in, and he approaches this guy smoking a cigarette to tell him, I'm sorry, sir, it's, you know, city ordinance, can't smoke indoors, public building. And the guy shoots him, bang, bang. So he stumbles out the door. He's been shot in the stomach. And he put his arm up and took one through the arm. Well, the gunman goes over, and there's a group of people. I don't know if you were in that room last night. A group of ladies and a couple, and the church organist, and a group of ladies and somebody else waiting for choir practice to start. And he just comes up, bang, 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 shoots these people. Some are wounded. Some are like bullets going over their head, and they miss. But one lady on the end takes one. She's dead. And the gunman goes by one of the other men there who was, it was like typical, the ladies, the people in your Bible study, the other couples you know, people that sit in church next to you. He tried to pick her up to drag her to safety, and he looked at her, and she was gone. So we can't spend time for her. She's gone to be with the Lord. She is dead. Very difficult. He goes, I realize she was, she shot through the heart. She's gone. She was gone. And so we have to move on to those people that we can save. Now, victim rescues. On a natural disaster, you've got to be really careful. They're dangerous. They're difficult. And sometimes they're impossible. But no, Roger, I can hear them in there. They're calling for help. Yeah, I know. I know they're calling for help. We can't go in there because we have no tools. Like here. We got people on the street. What can we do? This was actually not a natural disaster. This is in New York a couple years ago, where they had this huge gas main blew and just blew this entire building down. Building collapse. You're on the street. They're in there pleading for help. We don't have the training. We don't have the tools. We can't do it. And it's so hard. Sometimes you're going to feel compelled to do it. If it's your kids, if it's the people in your Bible study, if it's your next door neighbor, you're going to want to do it, and you're going to probably try it. I'm just telling you, it's dangerous, it's difficult, and it's sometimes impossible. Now, record keeping. Yeah, record keeping. Why do we need records? You know, this is a disaster, Roger. We don't need that. You know, why records? Okay. Assign a person to keep some records, if you can. If you have somebody in charge, you need somebody, people writing it down. What children were here? Who was taken to the hospital? Who's been injured? Who's been contacted? I've been in so many scenes where what happens is a bunch of people have been injured. The paramedics roll in, they go, these two kids are really critical. We've got to get them. What we're going to do is we're going to take them to Grant High School, and we've got the LA County Fire helicopters coming to get them. We're just going to snatch and go. We're going to go about a mile because it's a big open space. Helicopters are on the way. They're going. They leave. The parents show up and say, well, my son Johnny was at this after-school program. Which ones went with the paramedics? I don't know. It took two little girls and a boy. Well, what were they wearing? I don't know. I didn't get their name. I don't know. You don't want to be in that position. Now, in a big disaster, is it always possible to know what everybody's doing? No, you can't. But if you can keep any track of what's going on, remember that you want to keep some records. Also, who's been contacted? The church secretary, the paramedics took her. Okay, has anybody called her husband? No. Where's her husband work? Okay. Let's keep a track. Yeah, we called and left a message, and we're doing that. You have some kind of way to keep track of, because you don't want to be able to, was anybody called those parents? No, I don't know. What do you think? You know, I'm not sure. And people will look at you. If you're godly leaders, they're going to be looking to you. And this is not foolproof, but remember I talked about that little lady trapped in her apartment? You got to think about this ahead of time and be prepared so you can minister to those people. Same here. So you have a little plan, and part of that is keeping track of what's going on. Now, how do we recover? How do we recover? Okay. After something like this happens, the need to minister in that community is never going to be greater. It's never going to be greater. I could not believe, and I'll tell you a story in a second, the lost need the hope we can provide. There's going to be a lot of people, well, why did God allow this to happen? You know, how can a good God allow this? We need to be there, okay? So, two facets of recovery is restarting your ministry and reaching out to the community. I was amazed. A guy from Wedgwood Baptist talked about, remember the guy from Marysville last night that told the story about a guy comes in and kills a pastor? Well, who's going to lead the recovery? The pastor's dead. Wedgwood Baptist sent the pastor from Wedgwood. He spoke next Sunday and they met. You know? He got up there and said, I'm pastor of Wedgwood Baptist Church. This is what happened to us. You know, I lost three junior hires. This guy came in and gunned them down. I lost several people on my staff. I lost some of my closest friends, you know, people in my church. They started to recover. They restarted that ministry and started reaching out to the community. But restarting the ministry, man, you see these pictures. There's nothing left but a concrete slab. Okay? Sunday morning, we're having church. Everybody bring a folding lawn chair. That's restarting your ministry. Now, reaching out to the community. What can we do about reaching out to the community? Well, there's a couple things. Oh, I put this. Regular worship, if you can get on it. Like these folks here. Look at this. Everything's collapsed. They're outside. They put up a little shelter for them because it's hot. But they're going. Okay, now, reaching out to the community. It may be in a big disaster that for whatever reason, God has allowed your building to survive. You may have the only usable parking lot not covered with debris in this entire area. The emergency services will need that for a staging area. Hey, well, our church is gone, but the gym survived. Man, we need a place to put disaster supplies. We really need a building. You can reach out. It can be a shelter, staging area, a relief area. I'm not an attorney. One of the things that has been emphasized to me and others is you need to have whoever in your church does your legal stuff quickly get a contract with the Red Cross or whoever. They can scratch out just an agreement. We'll do this, this, and this. And if this is destroyed or has to be moved, we'll replace it. If possible, you know, you've got to, this is where it goes back to being prepared ahead of time. You need somebody that you can reach out to that says, yeah, I can quickly step in and represent the church, because you want to have, you still want to be wise about doing it. You want to reach out to the community, but you have to be prudent also. Now, preparing for a disaster. Four steps. Get your emergency plan together. And there's all kinds of people here that are experts on emergency preparedness and writing plans. My thing is keep it focused on what your threats are and keep it simple. And next thing is train people to use it. The world's greatest plan, if nobody's ever seen it, it doesn't do us any good. Collect supplies and equipment that you're going to need ahead of time and prepare your facility. We'll go through this quickly. Once at a time. Okay, developing the plan, we've talked about that. Organizing a disaster team as part of the plan is get the people together, everybody that's a nurse, everybody that's a paramedic, everybody that's a doctor that goes to this church, that's our medical team. We get people together. People with construction experience, I told why you need them. Persons with public safety background, okay, to get those people together. If something bad happens and you're not at work and you're stuck here, this is what we're going to do. Now, training the team. You teach them what you expect them to do during a disaster, and also there's a lot of free training. The big thing with churches is, do we have money to hire people? No, we don't have any money. But there's a lot of free training through like your local EMS authorities and the Red Cross, people like that. They'll come in there for free and train your people. Have a little bit of training. So that's available. Make sure you track that down. Now, what kind of supplies do we need? We need food and water. Now, some people say, well, you know, Roger, you have Grace Community Church, 10,000 members, and you got this Southeastern mega church over here, 20,000 members. How are you going to collect food and water for all those people? You can't. But what I recommend is have a little food and water for the elderly, small children, and the special needs members. Those are the most at-risk people. They can't walk away for help. You can't send them off on their own. These are the people that can't leave. First aid supplies, and especially supplies for infants, so you can keep those infants going. If you might have, maybe the parents are dead and you're stuck with them. I don't mean stuck with them in a bad way. I'm just saying you're responsible for those infants. The parents are gone. Okay. The county hasn't arrived with anybody from Protective Services. Their building got destroyed. So you've got to have things like this. Now, what kind of supplies also do you need? Here's some general areas. Personal protection. Have, if nothing else, have 20 pairs of gloves. You can go to Home Depot for $2 and get a pair of work gloves. Some goggles, maybe some hard hats, things like that. Some cleanup tools, cleanup gear. Tools. And if I was to pick, there's two tools. If I was to pick a couple things, I would have a lot of flat-nosed shovels. Why is that? Get rid of debris. And a good pry bar. And when I talk about pry bar, I'm talking like if you get yourself a 6-foot pry bar, get one. Why is that? Because if you go to any modern construction, most churches, what do you have? You have a steel case door. If we have that 7.8 earthquake or that tornado and that door tweaks, you could have your nearest NFL football team pulling on that door or pushing on it, and it's not coming open. But a tool like a big pry bar, one big pry bar, you can get a team of three or four people and go through and open every door in the place right now. Now, you're never going to use that door again, but you can get it open and get people out. And then lighting, emergency lighting, flashlights. Make sure all your ushers have got a flashlight. And then they've got lights like this. It'll come on a stand because this bad thing happened. It's 10 in the morning and we're stuck here and it's a regional disaster. It's now 6 p.m. It's October. It's dark. Got to have lights. A rescue chair. Does everybody know what a rescue chair is? Folds up. It's got handles. We can put people in it. Do you have a multi-story building? How are we going to get them down? Oh, that fireman's rescue. Yeah, well, good luck with that. This way, you can take people downstairs. You can put people in this and get them moved. Elderly people that collapse, you can get them out of there. And this is much better than carrying them. Litters. They have all different kinds of litters that you can get. They're not real expensive. You get this backpack kind that can be stored away. if you've had to carry people with your bare hands, you don't want to do that. And if you have a lot of people injured, you can't do it. You're going to hurt them. You're going to hurt yourself. And trying to pick people up by their clothes, trust me, 27 years of being a cop, that doesn't work. They're going to be, this sounds awful, they're going to be wet. They're going to be bloody. You can't do it. So you need this type of equipment. Okay, summary. I put that picture in. That's Heston, Kansas. That's my hometown. That's what it looked like. There's not much left there. It's about 5,000 people lived there. And that's what it looked like. It looked like the Air Force came through with B-52s. I mean, where this picture was taken were all houses. That was a little residential section. So, I think you both live in tornado. Well, they have tornadoes in Maryland. But they definitely have them in Kentucky. So, that's, we know they occur within God's providence. We know these things will happen. We need to prepare for when they do occur. And that's my email address. This shows like the survivors from that Heston tornado. It was an F5 tornado, one of the worst in the history of Kansas. And it just shows the people. You can tell there's nothing left. I think they're in what used to be a gym. It's just a floor. There's no gym anymore. And so that was, I went pretty fast. I blew it. Forgot to plug myself in with the recording. But anyway, I don't know if either of you have any questions. My wife always tells me, she says, Roger, you come on too strong and you're too intense and it makes people nervous and you intimidate them. So hopefully I didn't do that. Or she said, you tell all these stories and then they're depressed or they're upset. So I try to be honest. And that's just my experience. And I've been through two major earthquakes in L.A. and we're getting ready for another one. It's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a question. Our church, we don't face too many natural disasters.
One of the things that, and I was thinking, I was thinking about continuity of operations. I didn't go into that because they said you got to keep it to an hour. But what I will tell you is, nothing you giving records.
Yeah.
All those things, you need to have multiple copies and have them stored off-site. There are businesses that store business records, and for a nominal fee to do it, there is off-site backup for computer records, especially your church treasurer. You got to have all that stuff because, for one thing, the people are going to need it for their taxes.
Yeah.
You need it, and there's innumerable records that you need to keep. And if you have a large staff, you got your personnel stuff, all these things, get up copies off-site someplace that'll be safe.
That's kind of
cool.
I call companies that get up with business.
know, one thing some churches have done is they have collateral agreement. First Baptist in Glendale has First Baptist, calls First Baptist in Burbank, hey, listen, you know, if we lose everything, can we come over and use your fellowship hall? Yeah. And so, as far as continuity of operations, that's something that you can do also, is have a collateral agreement with another church. Just say, hey, you know, because I talk about natural disasters, but I was reading about one deal. Lightning storm, this is like in the South, I want to say Alabama, lightning storm strikes a church, it hits the main transformer on the outside of the church, two lightning strikes it, main transformer hits the church, goes through, and every electrical outlet blows out in a series of sparks and starts a fire. So you can imagine a mid-sized church, not a mega church, but not a little tiny church, all throughout this building, and this is like on a Saturday night, every electrical outlet is now burning. Burned that church to the ground. So now what do we do? So that's
Well, one of the things would be, I guess if you haven't had a boy or anything like this, for example, you use a portion of kitchen in the church. Well, we use it when we use it. And a lot of times what happens is somebody will turn on the gas.
Church, you with the school, a lot of times they will have food, different things supplied in there, set up. Like we can do lunchtime this week. You, if possible, you need a generator or something to keep those the refrigeration going, because otherwise the food will be gone. It's at least 4 to 12 hours. So, and you may need that food. So, if you have something in some way that you can have a generator for just that.
Boy, so how's everybody just like ready to give up? It's funny because I heard a couple people talk about this, which is not really a good thing. We fight the battle, and Dan Dumas talked about it, which I really appreciated, in that you go to the past, you go like to the elder board and go, listen, I've done this for different churches. God's in control. We don't need you. We don't need to think about this. God's in control. And you have to be respectful, but it's kind of like, oh yeah, God's in control, huh? We know God's in control of all things, but do you get your kids inoculated for disease? Well, of course. Do you wear a seatbelt in your car? Well, yeah. Do you have life insurance? Well, yeah, of course I do. But we don't need to worry about having an emergency plan at church or for our Sunday school, or do any type of preparations, or have a security team because God's in control. Well, I always tell, I guess the thing that most people involved in this look to is at Nehemiah 4, where what's the first thing Nehemiah does? He's building the walls. He's got the plan. Okay, we got everybody spread out. We have some people are construction, some people are security. If you hear the alarm, we're all going to rally to this point. This is the, and a plan. And then, you know, I tell people, you know, you look at old stories in the Bible, and you talk about Lot. Well, what's the situation with Sodom and Gomorrah? Bad evacuation. God tells him, you got to get out, you got to go here. What happens? Some people won't go. Lot's wife looks back, and then Lot won't, no, Lord, I don't want to go there, I want to go here, and he has all these other problems. Bad evacuation. So you see it in the Bible, in the Old Testament. So that's, you know, when you go back, you know, that's something you can share with your church or ministry, wherever you're at, because it's really it's an issue, and
like I said, my wife says, "Oh, Roger, you get all worked up on this stuff," but I have a real, real heart for it, and I really believe very strongly. But and I put my email up there. I'm not. Just email me. I'm not like looking for business or looking to do. I'm thankful to have been invited, and just if you got a question, just say, "Hey, Roger, what do you think?" I'll be glad to send you my advice, whatever it's worth. But I thought that this whole thing was just excellent.